Good evening, everybody. My name is Leanne and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA Simple Actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed this night. So tonight we're discussing step four, the second half, which is the fear inventory, and the sex or conduct inventory, as been taught to me. I'd like for y'all to help welcome our panel. We have Phyllis and Will back. For those of you that were here last week, they were here and they shared their experience on the resentment inventory. So we're going to move on to the other parts of step four. So step four is made of searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And tonight we're going to start on page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
My name is Will Cheney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Will.
I'm grateful to be here tonight, standing in for my dear friend, Bobby, who has a health issue. My sobriety date is July 27th, 2009. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other men. My home group is Friends of Bill W. in Suffolk. We meet on Thursdays at noon and 8 p.m. Noon is as Bill sees it meeting, and 8 p.m. is a book study. And my sponsor couldn't make it tonight, but I'm grateful that Steve S., who took me to my first meeting and knows me well, is here tonight. Good to see him. My story begins at an early age. And I now realize this as a result of working the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that as a result of a traumatic event, which was I fell down the stairs in the middle of the night in the dark, 4 years old, after a nightmare, venturing out to get in bed with my mother. And at that moment, I now realize that fear became my constant companion. And I believe as I sit here today that God graced me with that fear, because without it, I would not be sitting here tonight carrying the message of recovery to the alcoholic who still suffers. And after that, I never felt safe. And I already had the ism part of the equation. And although my mother did her best to teach me well, she was a woman of deep faith. And she taught me to love my neighbor and to look for the good in people. And she taught me to trust God. And I never got the trust God part. So when I began using alcohol at age 16 or 17, all that she taught me began to ebb away. And the fear became prevalent in my life. The alcohol was my only solution for that fear. It relieved it while I was drinking, and just knowing I was going to be able to drink helped me with it when I wasn't drinking. And along the way, my false pride began to emerge out of that fear to mask it. I didn't want anyone to know how afraid I was. And that caused me to behave badly, to make poor choices, cause harm to others, and squander my God-given gifts and talents. And when I read that part of the book that speaks of worry, remorse, and morbid reflection, it spoke to me. I had spent so much time immersed in that, as well as over-anticipation of the future. And I muddled my way till my 59th birthday with untreated alcoholism, when I finally surrendered and asked God for help. And I had hope, and I believed that I could get the help I wanted and needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he helped me by putting an effective sponsor in my life at 3 days. And when I heard him share his experience, strength, and hope at that book study, I couldn't tell you what he said, but I knew he had what I wanted. I heard passion in his voice. I heard a positive attitude. These are things that I did not have in my life. And even at that early stage, I knew it was what I wanted. And when he became my sponsor at 7 days, he began to make suggestions and give me directions. And boy, I needed all the help I could get. I was very fearful. But when he gave me direction, I said to myself, I can do that. I can call you every day at 8:30. I can pray before I call you. And I believe these simple actions began to help me to walk through the fear. He gave me this guidance in a very matter-of-fact, firm, and loving way. It was pretty much a take it or leave it, Will. Anytime you want to step off the bus, you're welcome to. And so I continued to follow the directions until probably 2 months in. I walked into a meeting and I was my home group, and I was a Charlie Sheen wannabe. I wanted to show my credentials. And I had long hair and a scraggly beard, my Bob Dylan t-shirt, my cargo shorts, and my Uggs bedroom slippers on. And he looked down at my feet, and he looked at me, and in a very matter-of-fact way, he said, "I can't believe you're still wearing your bedroom slippers to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. When are you going to start dressing like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous?" I was receptive to that message in that moment. He seemed to have perfect timing. And I've never dressed like that again in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't dress that way in the rest of my life. Yeah, I can get casual, but that was my ego wanting to let everyone know I belonged. And along the way, and I'll wrap this portion up with this, as I walked through the fear, at 3 months I chaired our anniversary meeting, and I was scared to death. There were 80 people there. He said you have to wear a coat and tie, and I wore a hand-me-down sports jacket and an old tie, and I was sweating and nervous and shaking as I stood to the podium. And my voice went up and down like this, and I got lost in the format, and I walked through that fear. God gave me the courage to do it. And after that, I went in the kitchen and rolled up my sleeves and helped wash dishes. And that was the moment that I realized I had become a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
I'm Phyllis. I'm an alcoholic. Home group is Fellowship of the Spirit. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock beginner, 8 o'clock big book, and Saturday night speaker meeting every week at Abington Episcopal Church in Gloucester County, one of the old historic churches. I sponsor women, and I'm in regular contact with my sponsor, who in fact is, we'll get to the announcements later, speaking tomorrow night in Newport News. And about the fear stuff, it's interesting that being on this topic of the fourth step, I've been getting calls from sponsees who, you know, it's kind of like, well, let's get out the prescription pad now and write a little inventory. So little current experience with looking at fear, and I kind of had the realization, and I love what Will was talking about, you know, it's like we're almost like born scared, some of us, you know, and I think some people, they talk in the 12 and 12 about how some people are like the angry type, or maybe it's in the big book, I don't know. And then some people are the depressive type, you know, where it's kind of like self-hatred or whatever, you know, like, I've got to, like, drink so that I can be okay, so that I can hide the fact that I feel less than you, and et cetera. And, you know, not that the angry people don't, it's just, you know, I kind of had, everything was kind of like a dose of, you know, gosh, I messed up there, but, you know, it's kind of like your fault somehow, you know, but that was way down underneath the rest of it, you know, like I'm a victim, like they're just not nice enough to me. But anyway, so we were talking about the fear. It kind of flows so naturally, like you've written fear potentially in your third column in your inventory that we talked about last week. And, you know, when we really think about it, a lot of times almost everything comes from fear. Sort of like taking off that layer of what they did, then I can start to maybe have some courage after doing all the prayers and all the looking, you know, like in the fourth column, like last week, where we looked at, you know, where was I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened. Where was I frightened? So what's going on with that? You know, like, we don't have that paragraph here about why do I have fear, but what my sponsee and I were talking about was the need to be right. Like, what's up with the need to be right? Like, what? So she wrote, and then I have written and returned to it. Like, what happens if I'm wrong? Like, I'm nothing. I'm, you know, like, it's very good to do some of this writing because so much of when I'm right is just so much you, you know? Like, if you weren't wrong, then I wouldn't have to be like this. But then it comes down to something has come up that, you know, I've decided I'm right, and so I'm just going to pursue it to the gates of insanity and death, you know? Like, they talk about put the monkey that puts their hand in the jar to try to grab the food, and then they won't let it go. I am that monkey. Anyway, so enough on that part.
Thanks, Phyllis.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
I pulled out my fears list today and reviewed it. And at the top of the list was people. I remember doing my fist up. My sponsor said, "What people, Will?" I said, "All people." It didn't matter where I was. If I walked into a room full of people, I would call out the one that looked just as afraid as me. And we would take each other hostage. And if they drank like me, even better. And of course, second was destitution. I had been broke during my years with untreated alcoholism, and I don't do broke well. And I had terrible dreams of destitution over the years. And there were some phobias sprinkled in there. I was prone to panic attacks, walking into a customer's office and just speaking with the receptionist, not even the owner. But right at the top among these, it was public speaking. And I'm so grateful that I remember saying to my sponsor when I was fairly new, "When will I be asked to tell my story?" And he had the most simple answer, "When you're ready." And that gave me a sense of well-being. And it happened one night, Steve S. called me to finish playing golf, and it was in the evening, and he said, "We're going out to Bird Neck Detox tonight, three of us. Would you like to go along?" I said, "Sure." And I'd always promised myself I wouldn't drink Starbucks before I spoke because it makes me jittery. And on the way out there in the car, Steve said, "Well, who's speaking tonight?" And of course, I believe there was already a plan in place. And of course, it was me, and I was ready. And I went into the restroom before the meeting and said a little prayer and asked for God's help. And as soon as I opened my mouth, I was calm. And I'm going to comment on this last line, "At once we commence to outgrow fear." I now realize when I experienced that spiritual awakening and that psychic change at 9 months, that I had outgrown the fear that was at the root of my alcoholism. It didn't mean all fear disappeared from my life. I still experienced trepidation when my sponsor suggests a new service position. And I pray about it, and I experience some pain, and I take the guidance. Thank you.
Thanks,
Will. Thanks. We're in the world to play the role he assigns. To the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? So there's a whole lot of stuff in the book about that turning, you know, turning away from self. One of my favorite lines in the book is when Bill is sitting with Ebby and he comments that his roots grasp a new soil. I really like that image. You know, and so much through the book, and I kind of missed some of that when I was newer in the program. I tended to like to go to meetings that felt a little like kumbaya, you know, talk about your bad day kind of thing. What about my needs? And hey, if that keeps people from dying, so be it. You know, I got to the point where I couldn't stand it anymore and I needed to actually work the steps a little deeper. But the point is that a psychologist might sort of miss the point here of it looks a lot, kind of, from the outside, like a group therapy thing. But we're really in a spiritual program to reduce our ego to the point where we stop suffering and we keep it that way by giving it back to other people, by taking the focus off me and out there. And when I'm doing that, I feel so much better. I hear myself saying things to sponsees that I need to hear, etc. And that hole that never seemed to close up in me started being much, much, much smaller once I did start sponsoring people pretty regularly. And you just can't, I don't know, just it's a big secret, just revealed here now. this stuff works like that. So what's the point? Like, I'm trying to fix myself with my ego, but it's actually this reliance over here that I must learn to do, and I must, you know, kind of like evolve myself into doing because I don't naturally want to do it. And so the steps are that path. So it says, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. And so I always want to know what to do. And, you know, like, I would ask my sponsor, you know, like, I get these phone calls, like, I'm mixed up, I don't know what to do, or I'm, you know, out to dinner with somebody, hey, I'm having these problems. And I don't have a, I mean, sometimes we've got a little bit of suggestions there, but it's more like, you know, we need to do the stuff that puts us in this position to where we will trust. And then my doing is informed by what God would have me be. You know, it's like, what would you have me be, not what you have me do. You know, that kind of like comes along. And plus, whatever it is I choose to do, if I'm in that position of love ahead of fear, it's probably going to be a lot better outcome from whatever I choose to do. You know, be done from that love and service instead of what do I get? What's that? WIIFM? Anybody ever heard of that? What's in it for me?
Okay, we're going to continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all in a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
This part of the fourth step, and looking back, I now realize how important it was to the deflation of my ego, the leveling of my pride, to get these relationships on paper and to see my part in it and to speak of it with another alcoholic. And God put a beautiful, wonderful woman in my life for my second marriage, but it didn't have that physical aspect that I always sought. I loved her dearly. We had a magical marriage for 12 years. When God put my third wife in my life, a beautiful, wonderful woman who happened to be sick in a different way from me, and financial was the way, it did have that physical component that I'd always sought. And I say she's wonderful because she had the greatest sense of humor. We were always just on the same wavelength and laughed at the same things. And I wasn't going to let her go. And we never even lived together. We lived 4 hours apart. And that's an alcoholic choice there. And you know, my customers would say, "How'd you get this deal, Will?" "Well, you know, I know how to roll." And but what it became a battle of wills. And we had a lot of what I call dust ups. I would get drunk, and she would secretly spend money without telling me. And we had our way of sorting this out. She used sex as currency, and I used currency as currency. I can remember taking her to MacArthur Mall one time after behaving poorly one night. She had told me, "I'll make as many Cosmos as you want," and she passed out, and I kept drinking. But I said, you know, I just took her into MacArthur Mall, and I said, "Whatever you want." And then when she would behave badly, because she could get drunk too, and then she'd act like a banshee, and she would know it the next day, she said, "What do you want, little fella?" And I always had an answer right on the tip of my tongue. And of course, that ended badly. But we remained close as I began to recover. And at the end, she did tell me, "Will, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." And I'm grateful for that. And when I had had a spiritual awakening in 11 months, we had gotten divorced. I had started all that. And she wanted to get together for a weekend in Richmond. And it had been a long time for me. And I went to my sponsor and I said, "Would it be okay?" He said, "You're consenting adults, Will. And if you'd asked me before your spiritual awakening, I would have said no. But I think you're ready." And we had a nice weekend. And we had sexual relations. And afterwards, I got that sense that she did not have my best interests at heart. And I knew in that moment that I want to have those kinds of relations with someone that has my best interests, my well-being at heart, and I have theirs at my heart. And I talked about this with my sponsor, and he said, "William, never have to sell," and I haven't. Thank you.
Thanks. I think what I want to say about this particular paragraph is working with others in this department. I think there's a few instances where I might have a little arbitration, but one of my early sponsorship experiences was kind of funny because when you describe the situation, it sounds like, yeah, that's a definitely bad idea for these people to move in together, but I knew they shouldn't, and so I made it a demand, like, "You will not do that." You know, of course they had to do it, right? And then I wasn't the sponsor, and I don't know, that might not have ever, you know, even if I hadn't done anything, that person maybe wasn't ready or whatever, but you know, I think I have to be careful not to get into human power, you know, like human power is me deciding what you should do or not. So right here, it's like, I think sometimes people have to do stuff in sobriety to learn how much it hurts. And that's what I did. I had to do stuff that hurt and feel it. And then, like Will's situation, you know, it's like, then you don't want to do it anymore. It's like, you know, that took a while for me. But anyway, people were pretty good with me, you know. I had a sponsor that didn't seem to get too involved in that. They just got tired of listening to me. And once the last person had heard the same story over and over again about, "Well, yeah, well, it's kind of hard to listen to, Paul." So I was like, "Well, I guess I'll change now." Anyway.
Okay, so on page 69, We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
As I reviewed that part of the fourth step today, I could see where the self-centered fear had caused me to be selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate to the women in my life. I wanted what I wanted. I had a wonderful experience today, as I do most days. My air conditioner, I was leaving to go to a wedding in Harrisonburg for a couple of days on Friday. Not mine, by the way. And my air conditioner started going to fritz, and I called and set up an appointment this morning. And this assistant comes along, and he was probably in his late 20s, and he comes in the house to ask me a question. And he said, "Oh, I love your home." And said, "Do you live here alone?" And I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "Are you divorced?" I said, "Yes." And he started talking about his mother, who sounds pretty good. She's just turning 50. He said she's attractive and a professional in the sense that she's a bank analyst, and she's very lonely. And in my past life, I said, "What's her number?" And as I chatted with this young man, and he was interested in hearing what I had to say, I talked about how I live alone, but I'm no longer lonely. This business of having faith, I just love living alone with a personal relationship with God. And after that spiritual awakening, I yearned to have a woman in my life that I could share this experience with. But I have grown past that. I absolutely love this life where my primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, to be God's trusted servant. And at some point along the way, I said, "God, you're in charge of that." And I said, "I now realize that I may have squandered all of my opportunities in this area." And I didn't go into all this with the young man, but it was a way that I was able to be an example of what God has done in my life. And I spoke of spirituality. And he said, "Boy, that sounds like what she, not only she needs, but what I need." And I say, "All I can tell you is I had to have a lot of pain and suffering before I was willing to do any work to get it." Thank you.
I know you're not afraid of this anymore, but I'm just saying, my mother went on Match.com at age 79. And got the best boyfriend she ever had. just a little bit of hope, everybody. We had a lot of fun talking about it, and he was a wonderful guy. Anyway, so, all right, let's see. Conduct. Now, you had said that you could apply this to all relationships, and that's true. Having a kind of ideal for relationships is good. But looking at, like, where did we go the wrong way, these questions are great, you know. Was it selfish or not? And I watch people doing some of what I did, and this stuff was what really brought me to my knees a whole lot more. You know, Will, you've beautifully described the peace that comes from, like, you know, having to explain it with words to say, you know, when it says no human power, I had a sponsor who kind of like walked me through the phase, you know, where it was like, you know, like Will, I'm in sales, and you know, what do salespeople do? You're persistent, you don't take no for an answer, you solve problems so you can get the sale. And so, you know, I would like spot the guy across the room, you know, assess the situation, do a needs analysis, figure out what we needed to do to get this thing to work, and by George, I was on it. You know, how do you think that worked? Not well. Not well at all. I had to learn, like, that's that, and, you know, this other area is not like, you know, that's not how that works. So when I started dating my husband, once I'd gone through all the horror, I had a phrase. My husband's name is Tom. Let go and let Tom. You know, like, my hands are off. It's like, you know, you're going to be here, fine. If not, it's okay. Why? Because I am not getting my sense of well-being from outward things. My sense of well-being comes from a higher power. Nobody can take that away. It doesn't stop at, you know, it doesn't stop texting me. It doesn't ghost me or whatever they do now. You know, like, always there. Always there. And so that fulfillment allows me to take chances to open my heart to somebody else, because if it doesn't work, it wasn't meant to be. You know, and like, I can also say, hey, this is kind of where I'm at. Like, I never had the, I don't know how to say it, but like the sense of, it's okay to be me. It's okay to want a commitment if you do. I think I was probably afraid of it when I was dating the no commitment people. I was the no commitment person, but nonetheless, once figuring this out, it was kind of like, okay, here's where I'm at. You're not there? Okay. Kind of painful. It would have been nice, but not going to work out. Okay. You know, instead of like, as they say, everything has claw marks on it sometimes when we let it go. It's just a whole, probably one of the most profound things other than letting go of drinking in my life was to make that transformation. I mean, it was like, took a long time, and I heard lots of stuff this way, but it took a long time to get to my heart. But once it did, man, peaceful.
Okay, on page 69. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to bridge towards it. We must be willing to make amends when we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
That third wife called me. I think it was the next Thanksgiving after I'd seen her that weekend in Richmond, and said, let's get together. And fortunately, I had a commitment. I was making the coffee at my home group and watching over cat sitting for a friend. And I didn't have to tell her that it wasn't going to happen anymore. I did not want to cause her any more harm. And as God would have it, a friend's dad passed away, and he was in his 90s, and there was a service a year ago in Richmond for the man, wonderful man. And both of my second and third wife were going to be there. And I called my sponsor and I said, I've got some trepidation about this. I'm not sure who I should sit with. And he said, simply, well, just do your best to let God be in charge. And I prayed, and I let God be in charge. And the way it worked out, I ended up sitting with the second wife because my third wife had family with her. And we spoke after the funeral, my third wife and myself, and it was a nice conversation. I have not heard another peep from her since. And then, you know, I intended no harm to her, towards her, and I talked about it with my sponsor again, and he said, "Will you handle it the way you should have handled it?" And I hope one day, I think she was offended that I would not sit with her, I believe, but I don't really know. I would hope that one day she could come to have forgiveness for me. I don't want to call anyone anywhere any more harm. This became apparent from doing this work in the fourth step, and I looked at all the harm I caused because of fear and in my sexual relations. God helps me with this. God helps me with everything in my life. All I have to do is ask. Thank you.
So they talk about an ideal, and a written ideal can be a very good thing. Is that something that we can continue to look at? It talks about not causing more harm. And so those situations can be kind of tricky. They go into that a little bit in the text. So I think one of the big pieces of advice you'll hear in the program, I think it's a good one, is people will read the steps and say, "Amends, yeah, you know, I feel so guilty about X, Y, Z." And so the first thing they think is, "Well, I feel so guilty, let me go relieve my guilt by apologizing, by confessing, by whatever." And it talks here about causing more harm. So often you'll hear in meetings when we're going through these steps, "Don't do this unless you are spiritually along the path to this point, having done all the work up to that point that will prepare you," and then discussing it with someone, the advisor, your sponsor, whoever, so that, you know, my will is not involved, because my will can get a little, you know, like seeming like God's will somehow. You know, it looks so right. Anyway, so that's what I would say. Like, yes, it says God alone can counsel our sex situation, but I think some good input and other people's experience is definitely real important in this part.
Okay, on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
I wasn't a particularly promiscuous man, but like Bill W., the drinking man, I had a lot to do with that. And by the end of the night, I wasn't going to be in any shape to get up with anybody. That imperious urge, I love it when Bill uses big words, because now I look them up and I realize it means overbearing and overwhelming, and it comes from a place of arrogance, my pride. And because I had a sponsor that gave me these boundaries, he gave me the boundaries that I needed to look for romance outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was good guidance for me, and I'm making no comment on what anyone else does. And I have been able to stick with that. And I have, outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a romance sponsor, a dear friend who guides me in these matters. And I have a sponsor in my business partner. I have a sponsor in golf. I am so fortunate because I need all the help I can get. I play with the pro at my club who teaches me the rules, and I want to know what the rules are today. I want to be rigorously honest. Faith has done for me what I could not do for myself. This trust I place in God, this personal relationship with that I have with the God of my understanding, has led me to a life I could have never imagined. And as a result of doing the work in this fourth step, one of the things I get to do after my morning devotions is take a power walk. And either right before or right after, I listen to a Van Morrison song. It's called Retreat in View, but I call it my 11th step song. And in it, he says, the higher you go, the more you know that you can find. Like a memory that's there, stuck in the back of your mind. And what that means to me is I believe I was born into this world in a state of purity and goodness until I became tainted by fear. And then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sponsor has led me back to what my mother taught me. And I am gravitating a little bit every day towards that purity and goodness, the way that God means for me to be. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. This whole section relates back to our mission. This one where it says about making the decision. Of course, the decision is the third step, decision. And then the action, of course, being the inventory and the rest of the steps. I need to talk to the mic. So this is a good beginning here that we've done. And sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, I guess is what I would say. You know, like for me, I did stuff until I just couldn't stand it anymore. And I actually, one night, in letting go of a relationship that had been on and off for 3 years, and the one people are tired of hearing about, I'm like having all this emotional pain, literally almost like physical, you know, kind of like, And my cry was, you know, God, how can this is just me? Like, I'm trying to live this spiritual life. What's with this pain? I mean, this is like the worst thing I've ever felt. And the words came into my head, if you can get through this and not drink, then you can share with other people that they can do that too. And it just shifted everything. Like, wow, there's some good here that can come from this, you know? And I certain little part of me realizing I'm probably not going to feel this way forever. But, you know, it's not going to be in vain. And so it talks here about throwing ourselves into helping others. And there's several places in the book where it talks about all the stuff that was bad for us actually can be used for others. So this being a great one. Anyway, so faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's really this. That's faith is like the parent of peace, you know, like having that faith and being willing to let go, making that decision that God's going to be in charge. It's just so much, it's like you can just kind of relax a little bit. Anyway, I'm done.
Thank you. Y'all help me thank Phyllis and Will. We appreciate y'all spending the last 2 Mondays with us. At this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully supporting declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
One. So this is the thing I was talking about before. The Olive Branch meeting in Newport News has periodically, I think it's every quarter, they have a meeting where they have a dinner and a speaker. And that would be tomorrow night, which is the 26th. And this would be Val D. from Jay Walker Group in Richmond. Potluck, please bring a dish. Beverages will be provided. And it's 7 to 8:45 p.m. at St. George's Episcopal and address on Warwick Boulevard, 15456. I'll keep this up here if anybody wants to go. We can get to the info.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other AA-related announcements? Yeah, I've got one here. The 14th Annual New Day Group Picnic is going to be Sunday, September 18th, 2016, from 9 to 5 at Woodstock Park in Virginia Beach. And I'll leave this over at our literature table. And also on, this is a little ways away, but September 19th, we're going to be having a potluck supper and a speaker. When we finish the 12 steps, after the week after the 12th step that we discuss, we'll have supper and a speaker here in this room, and Billy H. from Madison, Virginia is going to be our speaker. So that's September 19th, a little ways away. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members please raise your hand? Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves with their first name? Just raise your hand so we can get to know you. Hi, Michelle.
Welcome. Welcome.
Anyone else? All right. We have a literature table over here. And please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a book. Pamphlets and paper is free. You can take that with you. But the books have a small price around the inside of the front cover. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, just come up and see me after the meeting. I'll be available up here at the table if you have any questions about what sponsorship is. And smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. As a reminder, this meeting is recorded, and you can find the recordings and upcoming events posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And thanks to all who participated. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is held at Plaza del Sol. It's down Colonial Avenue and 22nd Street. A bunch of us head down there after the meeting for dinner. It's a little Mexican restaurant. And can I just ask for us to thank Will and Phyllis one more time? Feel free to come up and speak with them and thank them after the meeting. And do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? BJ?
I'm BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And for those that care to join, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.